listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Do about you now. Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me, people, you gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people,
where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is?
What's with your life?
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease. Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity. Because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you have a great day today, a great weekend. And I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, must do, can do, will do, should do, and I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, that's right. You're going to get it done. Because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And we love you for it. Because that's the kind of perseverance and stick-to-itiveness that we need. Because I tell you, some tough times, and there'll be tougher times ahead. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com and click on the podcast programming, and you'll see African Perspectives. And I'm going to make sure, let me say it this way. The brothers and sisters of Motherland Media got together, because there's a sister too. She hasn't broadcast yet, Sister Marcia Lee. She's broadcasted a few times. But myself, Doc Rogers, Franklin Jones, and Marcia Lee, along with the brother who helps us make sure we're technically correct, that's Brother Kwaku. We all met and we're plotting a strategy to make sure that we are as effective as we can be and making sure that all the information that we're going to provide will be there for you in various ways. And those are the things that I promised to you, and we're working on that, and we'll continue to do that. I want to thank Brother Kwaku, thank Dr. Rogers. It's always good to see Doc Rogers. Good to see Marcia. And, of course, Franklin, definitely good to see Franklin Jones, considering what he has been through. Of course, if you listen to his program Wednesday, he did broadcast live on Wednesday, having been in a car accident last weekend, you know. But he's doing fine. His daughter, she's hanging in there, but she needs some therapy, but she's got to get back to school in Florida. So I want to thank that gathering. And I really appreciate it. We'll, you know, continue to work hard to make Motherland Media on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com as effective as it can be. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, we're here once again every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And also, right after this program on Mondays and Wednesdays is the Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with Franklin Jones. On Mondays in the evening, all times I'm going to give are Eastern times, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, also from 8 to 10. POC, Proof of Consciousness. Revive. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. Relationships with Joy and Troy. If it's Friday, and today is Friday, if it's 8 p.m. in the Eastern time, 8 p.m. Eastern time, that right, brother and sister, it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Check them out this evening. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And then on Sunday, it's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Right, it's not me. It is our good sister, Proof of Consciousness, Sister POC, with her program Revive on Sunday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The Warren Valentine Show, Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern. 10 p.m. Eastern, the Warren Valentine Show, right here on Time for an Awakening Media, Monday through Fridays. The number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. Go online and check them out. Buy some products. If you are in the Atlanta area and you are near the Greenbrier Mall, located off of Georgia Highway 166, then you can check out the kiosks in the Greenbrier Mall of WeBuyBlack, and they'll have the laundry detergent, this, all other things, the razors, the soaps, the lotions, and all kinds of good stuff for you right there at WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tahimba, and Africa for the Africans.org. Check him out. Go online and check him out because he has another trip upcoming. He has taken literally hundreds of our brothers and sisters on a tour to Ghana and other African countries. He is going at the end of November, November 22nd to December 2nd to Johannesburg. What's the word? Johannesburg. And to Cape Town, South Africa. And then at the end of December, December 24th to January 4th of 2020, he's going back to Ghana. So go online, find out for yourself, or give him a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429, how you can take advantage of and develop an opportunity to go to the motherland. Shrine of the Black Madonna, and the Shrine of the Black Madonna located in the West End here in Atlanta. Number to call is 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676, and they have everything. They have furniture, clothing. They have the red, black, and green shoes, the NASGAS shoes. They have Kwanzaa kits. They have books. If they don't have the book that you desire, they'll get it for you. All the artwork. They also have an African Holocaust Museum. And they have a class every Saturday. Free and open to the public. The Know Thyself History class. Multimedia presentation by Baba Olatunji. He does a great job. You can check it out. But if you can't make that, but you like that information, you can also go to the shrine and get the multimedia library for yourself. It is the most extensive cultural library of its kind. Over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, over 2,000 books. Brothers and sisters, it is 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment. And you can get that from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Another bookstore that we promote is Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, located right near the kiosk of We Buy Black. And the Medu Bookstore has books and all kinds of postcards and greeting cards and t-shirts and figurines and all so much more. give Sister a call at 404-346-3263. If you're looking for that special book, give her a call. She may have it. If she doesn't, she'll get it. Believe me. Greenbrier Mall in Atlanta. 404-346-3263. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother Gazimde Ajamu. And that bookstore is located 6984 Main Street in Lithonia. The number to call is 404-519-8107. 519-8107. Cafe Ulu. The broadcast was last night. Sister Nanana and Baba Kambizi, outstanding job. And they're every Thursday night at 9 p.m. on Blog Talk. The number to call to listen or to participate or to give a conversation is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. The Thursday night broadcast. Mark your calendar, put it in your phone or whatever. Give it a listen or give us a call. Go online to Us Lifting Us. Become a member. Because Us Lifting Us is an economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics. We pulled our resources. We pulled our resources and we created Cafe Ulu here in Atlanta, located 2036 Sylvan Road, Sylvan Plaza. And we specialize in coffee. We have Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenyan, Ethiopia, where coffee was originated, and other African and Central American coffees. And, hey, South America, we have Brazil. So check us out at CafeUlu.com. Buy some coffee. If you're in the Atlanta area, please stop in. CafeUlu.com. Another thing we promote is the Vitality Drink Ambrosia, Brother Novak Young's delicious Vitality Drink. It comes in alkaline water, ginger, turmeric, organic cane sugar, and chlorophyll, as well as hibiscus, cinnamon, aloe vera, cayenne, and spirulina. There's five different varieties. There's the original, known as Sororo, made with red hibiscus flowers. Maybe enjoy it hot or cold. There's Bite, the original, just like the original, except it has extra ginger. Then there's cinnamon, Sororo brewed with cinnamon for a spicier taste. And then there's Gold, made with yellow hibiscus flowers, aloe vera, and cayenne. And then there's Green. The same formula has the Gold combined with the superfood spirulina. Give brother a call at 678-508-7254. 678-508-7254. Or CompleteBeauty.com. CompleteOneBeauty.com on his website. Brother Novak Young Ambrosia. Oh, man, I'm sorry. Sorry about that, brothers and sisters. Akaban Institute, Brother Baba Baruti and Sister Ya Baruti are teaching our young men and women the right information for us, for our self-determination, for our self-determination, our liberation, our sovereignty, for our people to be warriors. So they need our help. So please, brothers and sisters, send your check or money order to Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786. P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use PayPal and Cash App, you can do so too, Yah. $Yah M. Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. They need those donations, as well as Sister Gabby in Haiti. She's doing superb work in the southeast rural area of Haiti in those mountains. You can check her out online. So you can see the great things that she is doing. S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. S-O-N-J-E dash A-Y-I-T-I.org. SanjayHaiti.org. Check out Brother Scotty Reed, BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com, BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. And the Black Talk Radio Project 2019 Media Fund. Please support what we're doing. The Black Talk Radio Network is the number one Black Talk Radio podcast in the nation. Number one. And I'm proud to be honored, proud to be working with all the brothers and sisters who are associated with Black Talk Radio Network and, of course, Time for an Awakening Media. Another plug for my good brother. I know next week, Saturday, is the 17th, and everybody will be excited in the Los Angeles area to be a part of the caravan, the Black Conscious Caravan, that's going to be riding through the city of Los Angeles, coming to the various centers. And I'm going to go online and run that down to you. But you can give Brother Jabari Jumaane, my good brother Jabari Jumaane, a call at 323-292-5550, 323-292-5550. Or you can check them out at FIBA_center@hotmail.com. Brother Jabari Jumaane and the Black Consciousness Caravan. It's a great idea. I think if other cities have, because this is basically, it's us. I'm not sure who the bus company is. If the bus company is us and all the other things are us, it's just fantastic. And it's on Marcus Garvey's birthday. You cannot beat it. So check it out. Dr. Rinoko Rashidi, my good brother, he's going to Senegal and Gambia and the Guinea-Bissau at the beginning of next year, January 21st through February 4th, 2020. The rate is $3,800, $3,856 sharing a twin room. If you want a single room, you just pay another $680. But $386 and you're going to Senegal, Gambia, and Guinea-Bissau, man, what a deal. That's Baba Rinoko Rashidi. And of course, you can call Rinoko Rashidi, give him a call. And let me see if he has that number down here for you. Yeah. He has the information here. Make check money payable to African Dreamers Tour. That's located in New York. And I don't see a number for him here. But, of course, he was on a program the other day. He gave that information out. And I'm going to do one better. I'll give you the information right here, right now. Because that's the kind of brother I is. Yep, that's right. And, of course, you can catch him at Rinoko@hotmail.com. RUNOKO@hotmail.com or DrRinoko@gmail.com. And of course, the number that you can give him a call at 323-803-8663. Rinoko Rashidi, 323-803-8663. Give the brother a call and see if you can get on his trip. And believe me, I'm going to go one day. I am. That's a bucket list for me to go with Brother Rinoko, and I'll do that soon. But there's other things I'm trying to do, too, as you know. So you can only do so much. You can only do so much. Garvey Fest. Garvey Fest next week, Saturday, will be here in Atlanta. It will be at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. There may be some others. I got to keep my ear to the grindstone. To make sure I, you know. Sorry about that once again. I got to do something about that, don't I? That's for sure. Okay. Shrine of the Black Madonna. And it's going to be this Saturday. I'll get more detailed information. Also, too, if you are in Milwaukee, the Africans on the Move, they're going to have Garvey Fest at the African-American Women's Center located on 30th and Valet on that Saturday. Africans on the Move. This is their 30th year of celebrating Garvey Fest. I remember some great Garvey Fest in various locations. So check out Garvey Fest if you're in Milwaukee. Any Garvey Festival that you participate in. Inye Sesem, the Inye Sesem, the book of daily revolutionary thought. I'm just so happy about this book because it really starts us off in a very positive fashion. It really does. It starts us off in a very positive fashion, and I appreciate it. And what it is just, you know, those of us who, let me see. Okay, here we are. I'm going to do August 8th and 9th, but what it is, it just gets us into that good frame of mind. August 8th. Now is the time for us to come together with one another, to organize, to speak out and speak up on behalf of each other. There is no time to waste while we debate, define, and discuss. The enemy continues his genocidal plan. Brother Mutulu Shakur. A secret is a secret. If you have one, no one knows you have it. Some warriors have been so accepting of their westernized socialization that makes them need to consistently be seen and heard that it's vitally impossible for them to keep a secret. Secrets win and lose wars. Unbeknownst to some of us, attention is not what African warrior scholars need. We don't need attention. No. In fact, if the truth be told, in this reality, this is the last thing that serious warriors need. Guerrilla warriors thrive on the secrecy that camouflage quietly gives. An Ethiopian proverb says that confiding a secret to an unworthy person is like carrying grain in a bag with a hole. Good analogy, isn't it? We have to know who we are talking to and when not to talk, no matter who we are conversing with. Armies of righteous soldiers are required for wars that return a people's peace and bring order to the world. Such armies have to be built. They do not magically appear, and recruits are not summoned in the public court. Our position must not remain a public spectacle. Affirm, I do not seek out attention from unworthy persons. Affirm, I do not seek out attention from unworthy persons. August 9th. Jegna, or Jegnak, the plural form, are those special people who have been tested in struggle or battle, demonstrated extraordinary, unusual fearlessness, shown determination and courage in protecting his and her people, land, and culture. Let me start all over because I'm going to give the six things that Dr. Wade Nobles is saying here. August 9th, Jegna or Jegnak, which is the plural form, are these special people who have, number one, been tested in struggle or battle. Number two, demonstrated extraordinary, unusual fearlessness. Number three, shown determination and courage in protecting his or her people, land, and culture. Number four, shown diligence and dedication to our people. Number five, produced an exceptionally high quality of work. And number six, dedicated themselves to the protection, defense, and nurturance and development of our young by advancing our people, our place, and our culture. Nana Kweku, Sengondore, Dr. Wade Nobles. In Greek mythology, mentor is the adult male whom Odysseus, the protagonist in the Odyssey, trusted to raise and protect his son, Telemachus, as he traveled the world in search of adventure. Mentor, however, apparently had plans that went far beyond the mere development of Telemachus' cognitive skills. His intentions as a Greek were naturally homosexual. Historically, in European culture, when boys or girls are left in the hands of adult males or females, they become their sexual victims. And this is what makes using the Greek term mentor extremely problematic for Africans seeking to maintain a heterosexual sanity. We give power to others and their way. when we use their cultural particular terminology to defend ourselves, those we honor, and by default, there and our actions in the performance of those roles. So Africans use the word or the term jegna, not mentor. I repeat, Africans, us, American Africans, Africans, period, wherever we are, we should never use the word, and I've said this many times, never use the word mentor, jegna, when honoring those particular Africans who unselfishly put so much of their energy into training our youth to be adult warriors. We are looking not for mentors. We're looking for jegnas. We're looking for jegnocks. Jegnocks, that's the plural form. The individual is a jegna. Affirm, I am a jegna. Affirm, I am a jegna. The Yenye Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. You know, one piece that I've been reading and I'll continue to read it, because this program deals with what's happening to African people. Good, bad, and unfortunately most of it comes at us in a bad way, because collectively we don't have it together at this time, but we will. But this is a piece that Kwame Nkrumah wrote in 1961. I speak of freedom. Kwame Nkrumah said, because many people consider him as the father of Pan-Africanism. He was a leader of the first decolonized country in Africa on the continent, Ghana, 1957. And so he says, I believe strongly and sincerely that the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity and innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government will emerge not as just another world block to flaunt its wealth and strength, but has a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear or envy and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and dedicated to the good of all mankind. Kwame Nkrumah, 1961. But if we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we suffer heretofore. Both of those two statements by Kwame Nkrumah are on point and correct. But our problem is that we don't understand how important it is for us to move beyond all this rhetoric and all the stuff that's happening today to come together as one Africa. One Africa. I know there's a number of Pan-African groups. I know there's going to be a Pan-African conference here in the city of Atlanta next year. You know? So we have so much work to do, dear brothers and sisters. We have so much work to do. Today, we're going to talk about gun control. That's part of what we're going to talk about, is gun control. There is no gun control in Western society for Caucasians, particularly here in America. What has facilitated the rise of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is superior weaponry.
If you ever heard this program, you'll know that I say all the time, one of the things about Caucasians must understand in their evolutionary development, they always found a better way to kill. They've always found a better way to kill. So we don't understand the human evolution of the European, the Caucasian. He is very violent. He is very violent. And no matter where he went, he was violent. He's an underminer, a supplanter, a taker, a destroyer, and destroying everything. And it is that way today. So when we talk about the possibility of having gun control, we have to understand that in a society built on inequality, in a society that is racist, and we must understand what racism is. And I maintain that we really don't. I've been having these functional definitions of racism. I'm going to get off into that, and then I'm going to get off into an article that is in The Guardian that I think that would be appropriate for this discussion, and that is Dying of Whiteness, Why Racism is at the Heart of America's Gun Inaction, Gun Control. The functional definitions of racism that I compiled over the years. The first one is the Webster's Dictionary, the Webster's Unabridged Dictionary. So they say that racism, a belief that human races have distinctive characteristics that determine their respective cultures, usually involving the idea that one's own race is superior and has the right to rule over others. That is a good definition as it relates to Europeans. But one thing has to be understood, there is no such thing as race. Race is a human construct. That means that human beings, Europeans, can develop the concept of race. And you can, you know, check out two individuals who you can look up, you can Google. Johann Blumenbach. And Carol Linnaeus. Those are the two men who came up with this Caucasoid, Negroid, and Mongoloid, and all these other stratifications and so forth. And so the definition of racism, a belief that human races, because there's only one race, the human race, of which African people are the mothers and fathers of. There are cultures. So a belief that a human culture, European culture, has distinctive characteristics that determine their respective cultural, usually involving the idea that their own culture is superior and has a right to rule over others, because that's what they've done. They impose their culture. When they come in, they impose their culture, their mores, their methodologies, their ideologies, their theologies, their whatever. They impose them. And if you don't go along with them, you're going to get killed. They're going to eliminate you. They'll wipe you out, all of you. There ain't no problem for Europeans to enact genocide. It's demonstrated they've done it. Dr. Bobby Wright, one of my favorites, of course, the psychopathic racial personality, the man who coined the term menticide. Menticide, what menticide is just a deliberate attempt to destroy our minds. That's what we have been experiencing, brothers and sisters. Menticide. Why we can't think clearly, why we can't think collectively, why we can't trust one another, believe in one another. Now, I mean, I know if you listen to Brother Franklin Jones, you know, his program, the Black People Matrix, he will consistently tell you is about the mind. Everything that these folks do in today is about to destroy the African mind. A functional definition of racism could be the oppression and exploitation of a people because of their race. Using this definition, it is very clear at this point in time that Africans cannot be racist because of our lack of power to oppress anybody. Caucasians, Indians, Chinese, they're all on the continent. They're all doing business. They're in the Caribbean. They're everywhere. Where we are, those other people, those other cultures are in a position to take advantage of us. Our recent ancestor, Dr. Anderson Thompson. The direct and overall physical and psychological subordination and subjugation of one's cultural group over another for the purpose of the belief supported by religious doctrine or scientific data that either because of heredity, genes and family, or culture, social environment, the dominant culture in power is superior to the dominated and powerless culture. I use culture instead of race. That's what we should do. There is no such thing as race. It's culture, African culture. So what he says here is that the purpose of the belief supported by religious doctrine. Christianity supports the idea that we as African people and promotes the idea consistently that we are cursed. There are religious groups who believe, Christian groups particularly, or the Black Hebrew Israelites, that we are cursed. When I heard Minister Louis Farrakhan talk about we are cursed, it really hurt me because I just can't see it. We're not cursed. When he talked about the hair on your head should not be kinky, that's part of the curse. It should be like your eyebrows. I'm telling you, the theologies that have been imposed upon us, that's what I'm saying. Keep it at home. There's only one thing that is important for African people. That is to recognize that we are African people and we must come together. We must close ranks. Put all petty differences aside. Close ranks. And work on bringing African people into the fore independently. Self-determination. To being liberated and, of course, being sovereign. To be sovereign. Yep, that religious doctrine. The curse of Ham, Noah. Scientific data. Of course, they always compile scientific data. Science is not. Dr. Jacob Carruthers, the great Babajetty. Science on, in his great book, Science on Oppression. It is not neutral. When the people who are controlling the Europeans, they will never be neutral. Everything that the European does is in service to Europeans. Everything he does is to maintain and sustain the privilege that they created for themselves. They will never be objective. Heredity, genes, family. Now, don't want to get off into that too much because the reality is this. The people who are most deficient, we look at human evolution, they are, Europeans are mutations. That's why they have the genetic issues and problems that they have to this day. That's why they're going through this problem right now of negative population growth. And that's why they're going to be killing us, eliminating us. Now, they've always been a numerical minority, if you want to use that word, on the planet. And in most countries, even though they control them. But they've been a numerical majority here because of genocide, displacement, and so forth and so on. But now that they're losing that, they're losing their damn mind. Cook. cultural, social environment. The European culture is a dominating, violent culture. A European culture is not good for African people. It has caused us all kinds of mental anguish and distress. It has caused us to behave in certain ways that you don't recognize, and particularly today, we are just as much as crazy as the Europeans. I don't even want to go off into all the things. That the dominant culture in power is superior to the dominated and powerless culture. Because of how European culture has developed, we believe that. We don't want to embrace us as Africans. We don't want to go back because European culture is modern, it's forward thinking, and da da da. European culture is death. Here's a definition that I've often used. In fact, if Dr. Claude Anderson ever comes back this way, I'm going to confront him because he owed me some money. He was in New Orleans before Katrina, when we had our training program in New Orleans. He was going to be our speaker, and he asked, does anybody know what a good definition of racism? And when he said that, I was like, I'm raising my hand. I was acknowledging it. I said, racism is not an attitude. If white folks had just hated us, we could handle that. But what do? They imposed a system on us. So racism is a system. It is a system of defamation. They defame us. They denial our humanity. And destruction. They are trying to destroy us. Racism is a system of defamation, denial, and destruction of a people's history, culture, and right to freedom based primarily on a false concept of race. Race is not a real concept. It's not a biological concept. It is a human construct. There is no such thing as race. Whites devised a concept, giving themselves the top position and everyone else at a lower position with us at the lowest position. And that's why we suffer. I threw that at him, man. The reason I'm saying that, because apparently he's done it other places and other times. You know? So, and if he come to Atlanta, or I get a chance to see him again, I'm going to confront him for sure. Just like I would confront Malefi Asante. I was going to do this thing on Afrocentricity. And I still may do it. Because, you know, Malefi Asante coined that phrase. But Malefi Asante has not been good for African people. He has not been good for the students, the doctoral students at Temple University in Philadelphia. You can contact ASCAC, the two brothers who are the leadership of ASCAC, the president and first vice president, Brother Mario Beatty, Dr. Mario Beatty, and Dr. Greg Kamathi Carr. Ask them. Contact them. They're both at Howard University. Contact them and ask them about Malefi Keti Asante. But I have a deeper one. Not just he's messing up folks at, you know, and challenging them in their doctorates and so forth and just being a damn fool. The deeper one I have is that Malefi Keti Asante helped get rid of an African-centered school that brothers and sisters in the National Black United Front helped develop. He did that because a Caucasian on the Kansas City School Board did not like the fact that these brothers and sisters were going to get these properties and do what they did. So Malefi Keti Asante sent a Negro, and he was here in Atlanta when I first moved here. He was going to be the superintendent of schools in the DeKalb County, but he was in Kansas City along with his other, quote, sister. And they hired him, and they got rid of the African Center School. I mean, it was a coup, really, because the number of buildings, property, land, and so forth is just phenomenal. And it became a reality. When we had our convention, National Black United Front Convention in Kansas City at that school, it was a great source of pride. We were having conference in the auditorium named after Nana Clark, Asa Hilliard, Nana Asa Hilliard. and other things. The teachers were in kente cloth, like shikis and so. I mean, they had it down. They had a person on in the common council. They had a person on the school board. They had done all the right things to make something happen that could have been a model. And the Malefi Kete Asante, his ass came into Kansas City in the dark of night to collect a six-figure payment. I believe it was like $150. I'm not sure, but I know it was a six-figure payment. I got this from Brother Ajamu, who I consider a real sincere, dedicated brother whose integrity is beyond reproach. That's why if I see Malefi Kete Asante anywhere in the vicinity, I'll confront him. Because he needs to be confronted for what he has done. Okay. Racism. Francis Cress Welsing. Racism, white supremacy is the local and global power system and dynamic structured and maintained by persons who classify themselves as white, whether consciously or subconsciously determined, which consists of patterns of perception, logic, symbol, function, thought, speech, action, and emotional responses has conducted simultaneously in all areas of people activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. For the ultimate purpose of white genetic survival and to prevent white genetic annihilation on planet Earth, a planet upon which the vast majority of people are classified as non-white by white-skinned people, and all of the non-white people are genetically dominant in terms of skin coloration compared to the genetic recessive white skin. When they talked about the demographers saying that this country by the year 2050 will be so-called majority minority. When these demographers stated this, they didn't understand that because, I mean, you know, Ben Rothenberg wrote a book about the decline of the West. I'm quite sure there was others who were sounding the alarm of the lack of births by Caucasians, you know. So, you know, they understood what was happening. And they wanted to maintain that numerical majority that they have here in this country. And, of course, they maintain themselves globally. But it is in everything they do. Brothers and sisters, it is in everything they do. And you are fooling yourself to think otherwise. Dr. Amos Wilson. White supremacy, whatever form it takes, wherever it exists, must achieve three major goals if it is to be a socialized blacks into accepting, if it is to socialize us into accepting its natural rights of final authority and primary privilege. It must establish the human racial idea as Caucasians in contrast to black. It must proclaim that blacks are innately destined to serve whites and that the fulfillment of their true nature requires their happy commitment to this service. Finally, it requires that blacks be persuaded that they are incomplete without whites and that their highest calling involves the sacrificing of themselves for the benefits of whites. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get off into more of what's happening. You know, we don't understand what we are up against. We really don't. We think we do. We like to believe that we do, but we don't. We don't understand the dynamics of European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege that has affected this entire planet. affected and infected this entire planet. Brothers and sisters, we're going to take a break. You come back. We'll be right back. You come back with us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
head built from the concrete, baby. Don't get no better than this.
Yeah. We've had some ups and downs, made a lot of bad mistakes, but we've always had some good times. And through it all, you held me down, baby. You've always held it down. Oh yeah.
There were times when I was afraid and wanted you to leave, but you stayed right here by my side. You never let me go. You always stayed around.
That's right.
You stayed around.
Just wanna give you, give make you love to you,
love to
take
you
with you on a rocket fly. People love it till we touch the sky.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You have listened to Brother Jaheim. I love Jaheim. Especially with Sister Lettucey. Beautiful. Beautiful. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programs that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Right after my program on Monday and Wednesday, it is the Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with Brother Franklin Jones on Mondays and Wednesdays. On Monday evening, 6 p.m. to 8, Acres of Diamonds, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then at 9 p.m., Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jim Okay and Sister Lacey. And then on Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. And then
on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Saturday Sports Talk. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it is Revive with Sister POC again. And then on Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it is Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and it is time for an awakening. Also, Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Also, always give this plug on a Friday, particularly to Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. My good brother, Yusuf Muhammad. And this program is on from 4 to 6 p.m. on Eastern Time, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness on Blog Talk Radio. The number to call, 563-999-3089, 563-999-3089. You know, I know that... this idea of gun control, you know, when the Black Panthers, they understood that it was time out, that we were being killed and murdered by the police, and they took up arms and they went to the state capitol when Ronald Reagan was when Ronald Reagan was governor of California. And Ronald Reagan is the governor of California, and the National Rifle Association, the NRA, they implemented gun. They were pushing it big time. Big time. Pushing gun control. Unlike today, in fact, when they talked about background checks, today, just on the news that I seen today, the National Rifle Association is trying to beat back Trump into saying, no, you're trying to go too far. I guess I don't know, and I don't give a damn. Dying of whiteness, white racism is at the heart of this gun situation. The country's refusal to pass new gun control laws has everything to do with defending racial hierarchy, says author Jonathan Metzl. Why does the United States refuse to pass new gun control laws is the question that people around the world, over 250 mass shootings. No other country has but a couple. Many of them have zero. And a mass shooting has been defined as four or more people killed. Four or more. That's why, listen, brothers and sisters, listen. That's why they say that American Africans are doing more mass shootings than Caucasians. I repeat. America, I know the face of mass shooters is Caucasians. But more mass shootings are taking place, particularly in the last few years, by American Africans. Because why? Gang violence. They're going into a street, a social event or whatever, and it's gang violence. They're just shooting. Four or five people dead. Chicago has them all the time of us shooting at each other, shooting each other in mass all the time. Last weekend, when you had the situation that you had in El Paso and in Dayton, Chicago had 40-some shootings, six people dead. Now, it won't be considered a mass shooting if just one or two people are dead and you just shot up the club. Or you shot up somebody's home, you shot into somebody's home, killed a sleeping child, as was happened many, many times. I remember one of the first times, well, I'm quite sure it wasn't the first, but at that time, this is a long time ago, and I went to a public forum and I said, this is going to happen again. Some people were a little upset with me, you know, Because a lot of times, I'm going to be honest with you, brothers and sisters, I don't want to be right. I don't want to be right. But yet, I can't be proven wrong because it's happening. And it has happened. And will continue to happen as long as we are in this mess. And so, according to Dr. Jonathan Menzel, a psychiatrist and sociologist at Vanderbilt University, European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is the key to understanding America's gun debate. In his new book, Dying of Whiteness, How the Politics of Racial Resentment is Killing America's Heartland, Menzel argues that the intensity and polarization of the U.S. gun debate makes much more sense when understood in the context of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. So they have whiteness and white privilege. See, I'm telling you what it is. White privilege. They ain't white and we ain't black. They Caucasians, they Europeans. But they develop this idea of collective whiteness. And what are their definitions? And then, of course, we come along. Well, they white, then we're going to be black. What are their definitions of that? Our wanting to be black is in service to the furtherance of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, or better known as y'all would say, white supremacy. Because us wanting to be black is to have what they have, to do what they do, to live where they live, to work where they work, to go to school where they go to school. Caucasians attempt to defend American Caucasians or American Caucasians, what? We'll say that way. Attempted to defend their status in the racial hierarchy by opposing issues like gun control, health care expansion, or public school funding ends up injuring themselves as well as hurting people of color. The majority of American gun deaths victims are Caucasian men, and most of them die from self-inflicted gunshot wounds. Suicide. In all, gun suicide claims the lives of 25,000 people each year. Caucasians are dying for a cause, he writes, even if their form of death is often slow, excruciating, and invisible. Menzel spoke to The Guardian about his analysis this month and again this week, following which appeared to be a Caucasian nationalist terror attack on Latino families going back to school shopping at a Walmart in El Paso, Texas, that left 22 dead. The conversation has been condensed and edited. The Guardian. You argue that America's debate over gun control laws and gun violence makes a lot more sense if you actually understood it as a debate over race and whiteness in America. Why is that? In my research, I look at the history and social meaning of how guns came to be these particular social symbols. So many aspects of American gun culture are really intertwined with Caucasianness and white privilege. Carrying a gun in public has been coded as a Caucasian privilege. Advertisers has literally used words like restoring your manly privilege as a way of selling assault weapons to Caucasian men. In colonial America, landowners could carry guns and they bestowed the right on to poor Caucasians in order to quell uprisings from Africans and indigenous people. John Brown's raid was about weapons. That's right, the raid on Harper Ferry to get guns. Scholars have written about how the KKK was aimed at disarming African Americans. When American Africans started to carry guns in public, think about Malcolm X during the Civil Rights era. All of a sudden, the Second Amendment didn't apply to many to many in Europeans' minds. When Huey P. Newton and the Black Panthers tried to arm themselves, everyone suddenly says, we need gun control. When states like Missouri changed their laws to allow open carry of firearms, there were parades of Caucasians who would carry big, long guns through congested areas of the downtown St. Louis and would go into places like Walmart and burritos restaurants carrying their guns, and they were coded as patriots. At the same time, there were all the stories about American African gun owners who would go to Walmart and get tackled and shot. Who gets to carry a gun in public? Who is coded as a patriot? Who is coded as a threat or a terrorist or a gangster? What it means to carry a gun or own a gun or buy a gun, those questions are not neutral. We have 200 years of history or more defining that very racial term. What moments in the past few years have demonstrated to you most clearly that it's impossible to understand America's gun control debate without talking about Caucasianness, whiteness? The period after mass shootings is often very telling. When the shooter is Caucasian, the context is the individual narrative. This individual's disordered white mind. This individual has a disorder. He has, you know, when the shooter is African or any other person of color, so to speak, all of a sudden the disorder is cultural. The narrative we tell then is about terrorism or gangs. Then there's a quite everyday level. There's nothing more painful than sitting in a room with family members who have lost loved ones to suicide. I talk to people who have lost husbands, wives, kids, parents to gun suicide. And they would come to the interview often bringing their guns. And I would ask them, did it change how you think about the gun? And they argue it's never the gun's fault. And they need the gun in case an invader would attack them. The narrative is always about protection against radicalized invaders or racial invaders. We so profound. They're almost nervous about bringing their guns. They're almost nervous not about bringing their guns, excuse me. And it is very much coded in racial terms. A number of people I talked to in my book basically said, I'm getting this gun because of Ferguson, the city where the killing of Michael Brown, an unarmed American African teenager by a Caucasian police officer in 2015, sparked sustained public protests led by American African residents. These were people who lived 300 miles from Ferguson, an entirely Caucasian area of rural America. When I tried to pin them down about it, they would say, this could happen anywhere. I have to protect myself and my property. I talked to a number of people in American African communities. For them, this meaning of guns being like a privilege was completely absurd or absent. They had very ambiguous or mixed feelings about weapons because for a lot of the people I spoke with in St. Louis, they symbolized carry a gun, get shot by the police. We got a caller, 602, good afternoon.
Yes, Brother Oshie, good afternoon, brother.
Good afternoon, Brother Marcus. How are you today?
I'm doing great.
Great,
brother.
Great.
You know, you are so correct, you know. The white man, his thing is, he who kills the most going to have the most. That's his idea.
Yeah.
Ever see him out of the cave, he's been like that.
He
ain't going to change.
No, he's not.
But no. Yeah, he ain't going to change. So our people thinking he got some redeeming character, don't hold your breath.
That's right.
But we are at a very dangerous point now with him because, you see, as you say, he's dying.
Yeah.
And if you know anything about, he's a dying tiger. And if you know anything about the dying tiger, he's the most dangerous animal in the jungle. Because he know he's dying, so he gonna want to take as much people with him on his journey to death.
Yeah.
That's why you see the increase in this thing here. And you're correct, it's going to get worse.
That's right.
Because as they get more hemmed up, you know, and as you said, they are a suicidal man is also a homicidal man. See, because he's suicidal already. He said, look, I'm going to die. So I'm going, look, I'm going to try to kill as much people
right.
and then take himself out.
Mm-hmm.
See? So we try to get as far away from these people as
we
possible.
Can. That's right, brother. That's
see,
right.
It's death around them. The whole thing is death. They have a,
yeah.
you know, you look at their culture. It's all about death. Frankenstein, Dracula, blood and war. And we need to
yeah,
study
no.
these people.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's why what I try to do, Brother Marcus, is give that kind of information out there to put something on our minds, to do the research ourselves, to think outside the imposed boundaries that these Caucasians have placed upon us, to look at them for who and what they are, not to challenge them, because there ain't a damn thing that we can do or say. They're going to continue to do what they're going to do. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They suffer from white fragility. They suffer from the idea of their own hegemony. So given those facts, leave them alone. Work on yourself. Work on our people. If we must confront them, let's confront them together, because the bottom line is their whole idea is to eliminate us, especially now. No, there's no more cotton to pick. Okay.
Nope.
There ain't nothing that we can do for them. It is time that we must do for ourselves.
Quick, fast, and in a hurry.
That's right. Brother. That's
Thank
right.
Thank you so much for your program, brother. It's always, you know, when I'm down and I hear you guys on the radio, it lifts my spirit up, because this is a very depressing
yes, it
society
is.
We live
yes,
in.
Yes, it is.
You know, you turn on the TV, it's something negative and depressing.
Yeah,
so,
especially
you know,
about us.
I appreciate, I'm telling you,
yeah.
brother, and I appreciate your program.
Keep Thank you, Brother Marcus. Now. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you, man.
All right.
You have a great weekend, okay?
You too, good brother.
All right, peace. Thank you, Brother Marcus. Question. Given how important you think Caucasian privilege is to understand gun policy, should people be taking or messaging about the gun control debate differently? I'm not imagining that MSNBC talking more about how guns are proof that you're a racist is going to change this debate. The point I'm making is more diagnostic one than a perceptive one. I'm saying that until we understand the racial tensions that underlie the gun debate, we're going to keep asking ourselves why this issue is so intractable. When we talk about guns and people end up polarized, it's not just because we disagree about gun policies. It's because gun policies symbolize a far greater sense of tensions in this country. When we're talking about guns, we're talking about race. Or we're talking about culture. The European culture is a violent culture. The European culture from its inception is a violent culture. They were violent with each other, and they have heaped violence upon the planet, on the world. And what helped them facilitate and make it in their interest and image, in their image and interest, is weaponry, guns. During a talk at a bookstore in D.C., a Caucasian nationalist group reportedly interrupted you in protest. What happened? My dad is a Holocaust survivor, and he and my grandparents escaped Nazi Austria. It took them about 10 years to get into this country, and they were only allowed because of the bravery of people who stood up and vouched for them. One of those people was in the audience, a man in his 80s who volunteered to be my father's host. As I was saying this, I looked up to the back of the store, and there are 9 men and 1 woman coming in with bullhorns and chanting. They were saying things like, "This land is our land. Invaders out." They commandeered the talk for about 5 or 10 minutes. At first, people thought it was a joke, and then they got scared. The bookstore is right next to the Comet Pizza, where Pizzagate shooting happened, the Pizzagate shooting. And then people, everyday people, stood up and shouted them down, and they left. It was very well rehearsed. They had a videographer there. What connection do you see between Caucasian Americans' daily choices about gun politics and the violent attacks we saw in El Paso. I think we run a risk of conflicting all gun owners with mass shooters. I've gotten comments on Twitter about people being mentally ill just for wanting to own an AK-15. I don't see that. I don't see those as productive. Many of the interventions that we're suggesting, like background checks, are going to have an impact on gun owners. It's better off if we have a conversation with them. I think that pathologically, all gun owners get us further away from any kind of solution that might bring people together. At the same time, part of what I'm tracking in my research is the politics of racial resentment, a particular form of anti-immigration, anti-government, pro-gun politics that have been represented in America for a long time. That's right. It is American has apple damn pie. These mass shooters, they're not coming out of nowhere. They're very extreme amplification of kinds of ideologies that are playing out in a much more anecdoted way in middle America. Did you come away from your research concluding that American gun culture is inherently toxic, or are there other dimensions to gun ownership and gun culture? I don't think there are many positive things about gun culture. My argument is a lot more centrist than I think people realize. It's not just about supremacy and oppression. It's also about history and tradition and general meanings. I came away from this research very respectful of gun ownership traditions in many parts of the country, and things people were telling me about guns suggested safety and protection, about the community networks that gun ownership lets people forge. For many people living in rural America, if anything happens to them, they are far and away from support systems, police, and other help. I think there are plenty of rational aspects of respecting the tradition of gun ownership. I have a lot of colleagues. Interview subjects and people. I'm still having conversations with who are pro Second Amendment, people who don't want mass shootings and don't want death. There are a lot of people who are in the middle of on this, on both sides. But because there's so many actors that benefit from polarization, everyone from Twitter to the RNA, there's no benefit to compromising. But I can list plenty of examples where I think gun policies and not about respecting gun traditions. They're about really pushing the envelope on seeing how far they can get. I'm not saying that people guns should be taken away. I don't agree that there should be guns in bars and classrooms. I think that people who are 18 should be carrying. I don't think people who are 18 should be carrying assault rifles. I don't think, you know, in my world, In Oshie's world, nobody has a gun. Nobody. There are no guns in Oshie's world. No guns. Even law enforcement, because you got to have law enforcement, because there got to be laws, got to be regulation. I ain't talking about Oshie's world is chaotic and anarchists. No, there are laws. Understand something, as African people, we are the first ones to institute laws to regulate society. That's what Ma'at is. That's what Ma'at is. Truth, justice, righteousness, harmony, order, balance, reciprocity. The seven virtues of Ma'at. Laws. That's why the people in ancient Kemet understood. They lived by in accordance with Ma'at. That's where they were able to do what they did. Granted, it was homogeneous society. But still, If a society is just, it doesn't make any difference who the other cultural groups are in it. If the society comes together and said, this is going to be the method and the way that we're going to govern as a society justly, righteously, honestly, respect, not, there is no, regardless of what culture you promote, the bottom line is you will be respected. That doesn't happen. But in Oshii world, that's what would happen. You want to hunt? You go to the gun rental. Guns are only for hunting during the hunting seasons. You can go to the gun rental. There are no assault weapons. They've all been melted down. No assault weapons. Oshii world, there's peace on the damn planet. African culture is maintained. European culture is in check. Asian culture is in check. Everybody's in check. We recognize the importance of maintaining the planet, cleaning the planet up, respecting territorial rights, respecting animals. Obviously, sometimes animals need to be for food, but not just that, because they don't want to be overrun. So you want to hunt them, bears, deer, whatever, you go to the gun rental and you get and you rent a gun. Oh boy, you will be scrutinized heavy, because the only thing that gun can be used for is hunting. And if it comes out, if you rent it and it gets in the hands of somebody else and they do wrong, you will be equally as responsible. In Oshii world, guns. No, I don't own a gun. Fired a gun a few times. You know, no. Here's this cartoon. You know. Why are guns not the problem? Explained with one brilliant cartoon. The cartoon, you have an older man sitting down with his gun, and he's saying this to a young person. In the hands of the wrong person, it can ruin lives. But in the hands of the right person, it can win a country its freedom. That's deep, ain't it? In the wrong hands. It's just like when they had the terms, you know, one terrorist is another one's freedom fighter and vice versa. Because that's the fact. The wrong hand. So, give us a call, 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. What do you think about guns, the history of the gun situation, the history of the racism that the gun ownership has? I said to you, when we, as African people here in America, trying to protect our community from the racism and the brutality of the so-called authorities, they quickly instituted gun control laws. But because Caucasians want to make sure that they have all the armament that they feel they need and that they got to have, then, yeah, Yeah, I don't understand that. When in Missouri, there was a Caucasian who went into Walmart in Missouri. Once again, Walmart. And he walked out, hands up, and arrested. And I'm quite sure he will be dealt with, you know, in the manner that he should be. You know. Because, you know, why he did that, you know, I don't know. But believe me, I'm surprised. Well, once again, if he's Caucasian, I'm not surprised that they apprehended him in the way that they did. They only shoot and kill us and other men of color. They will shoot and kill. You know, it's been shown all the time. Caucasians have a happy trigger finger when it comes to us. But they will arrest. You've seen some mass killers be arrested with ease. They ain't jerking them around. They ain't slamming them down. They ain't choking them. They ain't giving them a beat down. They ain't kicking them. The hatred that Europeans have for us has to be understood by us so we understand what we are dealing with. Our problem is we don't know what the hell we dealing with. We don't understand. And just like that great visionary, Stevie Wonder, when you believe in things you don't understand, what happens to you? That's right, brothers and sisters. You suffer. And we are a suffering people. We believe in theologies we don't understand. We believe in monetary systems we don't understand. We believe in educational systems we don't understand. And as a consequence, we are suffering. This society is very detrimental to our mental, physical, and spiritual health. But yet we can't part from it. It's hard for us to get out of it. It's hard for us to put it in its proper context, to think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us, to remove that vice grip that these, I was about to go there. And I didn't, I caught myself. That these Caucasians have on our minds. It is extremely difficult. We have a caller, 646. 646, good afternoon. How you doing, brother?
Oh, she, what's happening, my brother? How are you today?
I am doing fine, man. I doing this piece talking about gun control and the fact that...
Hey, listen. Let me tell you something. If you don't have a gun, you don't have you a shotgun, you don't have you something to protect yourself from this filthy, stinking, murderous Urugal, something wrong with you. You gotta have something to protect yourself and your family. Because listen, we at a stage right now, within the next 2 years, it's no telling what could pop off with these Urugals, with this type of sick bastard that they got in the Hunky House. You understand what I'm saying? If we are not in a position to protect ourselves and our family, something is fundamentally wrong. No, brother. You have to become armed legally within the restrictions of your state so that you could be able to deal with these savages and these beasts. Now, I don't know if you heard about this black man, I think, that had a carrier permit, held this sick, twisted Urugal that had him an AK-47 and body armament heading into Walmart.
Right, that's the one in Missouri.
I'm not having this BS. And he held him and called the cops until the cops come and they did whatever they did with them. But The Yorugu is the type of individual that like repeat performances. So whenever you're dealing with somebody that has that type of sick mindset to act upon a repeat performance that will hurt and harm our people, something's fundamentally wrong. Mm-hmm. If you do not go out there and place yourself and your family in a protective position. No, brother. You got to go out there and do whatever you have to do to be able to protect yourself and your loved ones. Because I'm going to let it be known. I'll take a hunky out before I take an African out any day. But I'm not going to let nobody hurt me or mine. And the bottom line is, we're in a society to where it's going to become more prevalent and prevalent of violence towards people of color in this country.
That's a sad commentary, but you're right. And it has been happening. It's happening now. It will continue to happen as long as we are here. I understand definitely what you're saying. I did mention that I don't own a gun, and I'm not going to own a gun. I understand what you're saying. You got to defend your family, you know, but I don't own a gun. I shot a gun a few times, you know.
It's serious responsibility. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about that. You know what I mean? When I was coming up as a kid, I saw a grown man kill another grown man over some nonsense. And, you know, I'll never forget it. I was coming out of my building. And this guy killed this guy over this woman that they were both seeing. Do you know his black behind went to jail? The other one was dead. And a few months later, some other Negro was up in it, like always. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like I always tell young boys, learn to control your emotions when you're dealing with the opposite sex, because they could lead you to doing something that will cause you harm for the rest of your life.
You're right.
You know?
Yeah.
And this was back 35 years ago, Oshie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I remember some even back.
I was like, no. Matter of fact, it was like 38 years ago. No, 40 years ago. I was 15 years old, coming out of my building, and this guy, I knew the guy, you know, real nice guy, and all of that. Mm-hmm. Hey, sure enough, I saw him 26 years later, out of jail, a half a shell of himself. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it is. You know, we live in a society to where as we try to act and behave in a lot of ways like this Yorugu, this beast. And for some reason, we as a people haven't been able to figure out what's in our best interest on how we're going to move forward as a people. So whereby we get caught up in these ancillated discussions about should you have a gun or should you not have a gun. Knowing the history of this white man, you have no choice but to have a gun if the truth is being.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. I agree. Once again, you're dealing with the most violent-prone individual on the planet. That's what helped facilitate their rise to the position that they hold now. It's fashioning superior weaponry. They always found a better way.
Yeah, my phone dropped, Oshie.
Okay. They always found...
Yeah, but you don't have no choice. You don't have no choice in this country the way things are now, Oshie, other than to have some sort of protection, because it's just absolutely crazy. But I understand where you're coming from,
and
though.
That's saying that the society is coming to an extent of such lawlessness, such chaos and chaotic situations, that the only way for you to live is for you to be armed to the teeth to protect yourself and your family and your property. That's a hell of a way to live. That's a sad way to live.
The society is degenerating into the worst than it basically has ever been on multiple levels. You know what I mean? The thing, to be honest with you, in a sense, but not really in a total sense, puzzles me is the culture of the country with the dirt bag that they have as the head. I mean, how could you have a dirt bag like that as the head and the country doesn't stoop to its lowest form of morality?
Right.
I mean, you know, because he's as low as they come.
Right.
I mean, and the thing is, what's wicked and even worse is that the media, in all truthfulness, are not confronting him on the level in which they should be and calling out the sickness and the madness of this savage. Giving this dog a pass.
Well, they are to some extent, and they aren't, because you have a number of people who will call him to question. But, of course, the real sickness is those other individuals who support him, who give him money, who will defend him, the words that he says and the stuff that he does. You know, to me, it's an indictment of the American people, these Caucasians, who would elect somebody who said to you, I'd grab him by the, or I could shoot somebody in Times Square. And you still just telling you how stupid you are, how foolish you are. I got a call. We ain't got that much time, so let me get this call. 447-447, good afternoon or good evening to you.
Yes, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are in the world. Hello, Brother Ochi.
Hey, Brother Paul.
Good morning to Brother Jay as well.
Hey, what's happening, brother?
Yeah, I just had to phone in. I know you're short of time, but I just had to phone in. You know, oh, man. Brother Jay, man, yeah, absolutely. You see, Brother Ochi, I told you before, and I remember when you first come on this station, yeah, you mentioned your age, you know, and I remember you're exactly the same age as my father.
Right.
My father speaks the way you speak. Yeah.
Okay.
But I absolutely.
Paul, it's a generational thing, I guess, right? Yeah.
Oh, you know what? My father absolutely says almost word for word what you say, and you know. But in truth, yeah, I don't see it that way at all. I'm my father's son, but I don't see it that way. I know things have changed, and I know, I'm not guessing, and I don't believe, I know that, you know, when this thing's going to kick off, you know what, whatever's going to have to go down, it's going to have to go down. And the only thing I'm worried about, I'm not afraid to die, but I want to live. And I'm not going to say that I want to die. I want to live, and I'll do everything to live, anything I need to live. But the truth of the matter is, yeah, the way I'm looking at things, and I've been analysing this thing for a very, very long time, an absolute long time. And, you know, we can't go on like this. There's no future in this, what we're doing. There's no future. I've come to that conclusion, absolute no future. And until we're ready to organise, the only thing we lack is the organisation. And we must organise. Every being on this planet has a right to defend itself, every being. And that's it. That's the end of it for me. Yeah. And those who don't prepare to end themselves, well, good luck to defend themselves. The way I see it today, at the age I am, good luck to them. But I'm totally in agreement with Brother Jay. Absolute 100,000,000%. Every being has a right to defend it. And whatever it takes to defend yourself, that was what you must do. And whoever thinks that's not the case, well, I'm not even in an argument with them. I'm not even in a conversation with them. Because it's clear today, absolute clear where we're going. Absolutely. So the only thing necessary is defense. And, you know, my father speaks like that. And my father's a martial artist. And my father has trained us to be martial artists. I've been a martial artist since I was 8 years old. So I'm surprised that my father speaks like that. But I know, I can tell it, and I speak it openly. Whenever the point of defense is self-defense. And every right has a bid to be so. I absolutely agree. Absolutely.
Well, understand this, Brother Paul and Jay and listeners. I'm definitely for defending us, because I'm espousing an idea to think outside of the box. And so when you do that, you got to defend that. Understand that. I'm advocate of speaking independently, thinking independently. I'm an advocate of independence, self-determination, liberation and sovereignty for African people. That has to be defended. That's just not something that you pull out your ass. You got to defend that. So I'm an advocate for it. I'm not a gun owner, but I'm an advocate for African people defending themselves against all kinds of attacks, whether it's a mental, spiritual, physical attack. I'm a staunch advocate for us defending ourselves. And to me, if we got to get guns or different types of guns or whatever, armament or whatever ways to protect ourselves, machetes, crossbows, you name it, let's do it. But just because I don't, it's not to say that I don't advocate for it or I don't promote it, you know, but I'm definitely down with responsible, because it should be in the context, I got to do whatever I have to do to defend me and my family. Brother Jay?
Well, Oshie, I stand by what you're saying. I respect what you're saying. But listen, I'm going to place myself in the position to deal with that hunky on the level that he needs to be dealt with, because I'm not trying to leave here at the hand of one of them. I think my ancestors would want me to protect myself and my family against him, because of all that he's done to my ancestors and to our people.
So, I agree.
No, brother, I'm not going out like that. They got to go before I do. And I just have to deal with the consequences. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I don't believe, like I said, that there's no heaven or hell just based on the simple fact that the way this beast has treated us as a people. So I'm not worried.
Yeah, this is hell right here. This is hell right here. Brother Paul?
Yeah, Brother Chi and Brother Jay, I just say this, yeah. I really understand where your stance is, but the reality of it is that when you check the precedents, when you check our story, not his story, when you check our story, they have displayed unapologetically the brutality over the years. And then, like Brother Franklin said, they've used misinformation to hoodwink us and put us in a state of non-defense. And what we have to do is simple. We have to change it up. First, as you rightfully state every Wednesday, it starts with the mind. We have to train our minds for self-defense, and we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. We are teaching our children to be subservient. We are teaching our children to be job seekers, right? We are teaching our children to be dependent.
Right.
That can't work anymore, Brother Ochi.
I agree.
That cannot work anymore.
No.
We have to go on the offensive now. We have to teach our children to go on the offensive. We have to teach our children to be independent of themselves so that they can, and we have to teach our children collective action. We have to teach our children first and foremost self-defense, to defend yourself.
Yes.
Because they're constantly, look, the black male in America and in the UK and in the Western world is walking around with a target on the back of his head. That's where it's at. Mm-hmm. And it's everywhere in the Western world, everywhere.
Yes, right? It is.
That's it.
Yes, it is.
For one to not realize that, one is only kidding himself. One is only fooling himself. You know, we can't just keep carrying, going along to get along. That day is done. That day is over. And they know that. That's right. Why they're building. Do you know something? Let me give you a statistic, Brother Ochi. I've heard a statistic before, and I haven't got the facts, but I heard it again very recently. The prison population per capita in the UK of black males is worse than in the US.
Is that right? I'm not surprised. The prison the prison population in the UK, from a percentage standpoint, is worse there than it is in here in the States. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I heard that, I heard another statistic the other day that there are more what they call here BAME, black and ethnic minority, in prison in London. Mm-hmm. I think it's 52%, but that means black and all the rest, yeah. But the reality of it is, this is the third time I'm hearing that there are more black males per capita, right? In comparison, when you look at it, if you compare the amount of us here to the population, we are overrepresented in the prisons. So there's a plan, Brother Ochi. The plan is to get the black man out the way. So we have a right to defend ourselves, and that time to go along, to get along, is done. Is over.
That's
totally
right.
Over.
That's
and
right.
We must divide in ourselves a mentality for self-defense. Whatever that defense is, whether it be martial arts, whether it be hand-to-hand combat, whatever it be, the children, that should be paramount in the children's mind. We must change the mentality now. And that's where it starts, in the mind. I'm not telling you to go out and get guns and lunch, whatever you want to do. But the bottom line is, it must start in the mind. Mm-hmm. When you step out your door, your home must be defended. Yeah. You must do what you do to defend your home, your area, your security. No longer should we play with knuckleheads in the area, corrupting the area. That time is done. That's all I'm saying. Because if we can't go along like this. There's no future in this.
Right.
You know, we're being set up to fail. And we can see it clearly. Those of us who have intelligence and intellect, we can see it. And we just can't just keep carrying on like we're dumb. We must start preparing for what's coming down the pipeline, and we can see it clearly.
Ashe, my brother. Thanks a lot. You got the last word on this, Brother Paul. We appreciate you. Always thank you for listening, man. You take care of yourself. You have a great weekend, and I hope that you can join us.
You keep up the good work.
Oh, you know it, Paul.
A marvelous job. Absolute marvelous job. And all the callers, Brother Jay, everyone, absolutely fantastic. Just keep the fire burning. All respect to you. Take care.
Take care, my brother. Brother Paul from the U.K., brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a great day and a great weekend. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodia. Abibi Fahodia means our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodia family, you have a wonderful weekend.